I think they have made the decision that it's worth sacrificing some lives and some people's health to have these rallies. I think it's actually working for them. I think it's brought some excitement to their campaign.
Do you agree with it?
I do not. I believe that the General Assembly's authority is pretty clear, is very clear, and rests with them.
The Supreme Court speaks. A surge of voting continues. And yes, we'll hit you with some predictions. This is the WUNC Politics Podcast. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Thanks for joining us. 4 days. 4 days. Can you believe it? Just 4 days until it is Election Day. Here to review some of what happened in the last few days in North Carolina state politics, as well as perhaps make some predictions, a little bit of forecasting for what could transpire on Tuesday, November 3rd, are the usual panelists, Becky Gray with the conservative John Locke Foundation and Rob Schofield from the progressive NC Policy Watch. We taped this conversation early Friday morning.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
More than 4 million people have already voted in what is the most consequential election in our state in at least 40 years. And the U.S. Supreme Court ruled Wednesday, and then again Thursday, that ballots postmarked in North Carolina by Election Day can be received until November 12th. Republican state lawmakers had tried to block this extension, arguing that the State Board of Elections usurped their power. In a year with a pandemic and concerns over the Postal Service, isn't the November 12th deadline a reasonable accommodation? Becky?
Well, that's what the Supreme Court ruled, and that's what some comments have been since then. Jeff, I think there's several questions here. One, I mean, that's not really the point. The point is, did the General Assembly have the authority to enact those regulations? Absolutely, they did. Did the State Board of Elections and unelected bureaucrats have the authority to override that? I think that was the question. The Supreme Court has made their decision. And I think the bottom line is now we know, and now we can go forward with this and moving into the election on Tuesday, we now know what all the rules are and we can move forward from it. So with that Supreme Court decision, whether you agree with it or whether you don't, I think at least we know now what the rules are.
Do you agree with it?
I do not. I believe that the General Assembly's authority is pretty clear, is very clear, and rests with them. That would be my argument with it. But I don't sit on the Supreme Court of the United States. And so I would, you know, absolutely, this is the decisions that has been made. And so we will move forward under these rules. And again, I think it's important that now we know and now we can move forward with it without any question.
I agree, obviously, that it's good that it's been decided. I agree with the Supreme Court. I don't think the issue was ever about the General Assembly and its authority. The issue was always about voter suppression, which is what the General Assembly has been about for the last decade. And they're trying to prevent people from voting who they think will vote against them. And obviously, even Trump appointees at the Court of Appeals, three of them, and multiple Trump appointees at the national level, decided that that was preposterous. They had the General Assembly had made numerous delegations to the State Board of Elections. They always have. And this is just an obvious common sense step, exactly as you say, in a time of mail delays and a pandemic and people being fearful of voting in person and the challenges of getting witnesses to come sign your ballot. It makes eminent sense. And thank goodness we're going to count all the ballots. I wish that were the case in every state.
I just would add real quick that the decision of having the deadline to be 3 days after Election Day was done with a bipartisan bill that was signed by the governor. So this is not something that Republicans did. This is something that the General Assembly and the governor did.
But it was passed, of course, at a time in which we didn't know all the facts that we know now about the Postal Service and the pandemic. And obviously things change. And that's why there was litigation. And that's why there was a settlement. And thank goodness we've got a good common sense solution.
All right, let's talk voters and turnout. Early voting has already exceeded the early vote of 2016. We're approaching 60% of all registered voters having cast ballots. The record for all turnout in any election is 69%. Do you think we're going to blow through that? Is 75 or 80% participation possible? Or is this all a result of the pandemic and the mail concerns? And are you actually expecting Election Day itself to maybe be very quiet? Rob?
I think maybe all those are true. I think Election Day will be quieter than usual. I think it's quite possible we'll blow through the number turnout that we saw. It's been nationally over a century since we've seen these kinds of numbers. So I think people are very motivated. Obviously, I think Democratic voters are especially motivated to do whatever they can to end the Trump years. And I think that probably explains a lot of the early voting turnout. It'll be really, I think everybody expects a larger turnout from Republicans and Trump supporters on Election Day itself. So it'll be really fascinating to see. But I think it's eminently plausible that we will blow through those numbers.
You know, I agree with Rob. Yeah, people are motivated to vote. I think one thing that's interesting is at least the early voting tabulations that we've seen and the return of the absentee ballots indicate that the interest and the motivation is coming from Republicans and Democrats. As a matter of fact, Republicans, for the first time ever, I think, have exceeded the number of folks voting on an early voting day. Some of those, you know, as we look at the returns that are coming in, those numbers and statistics. So I think that both sides are very motivated to vote. And I think we're seeing that reflected in the polls, too, is that, you know, things are really tightening up. So I think we're in for an interesting weekend and a very interesting week next week.
Candidates and surrogates will be here over the weekend and Monday and Tuesday making the final push. It's widely agreed that Donald Trump must carry North Carolina to have a chance at re-election. The Tom Tillis-Cal Cunningham race may very well determine power in the next U.S. Senate. What are you watching for, eyeing most closely down this final stretch? Becky, let's start with you.
Well, obviously, you know, how the president does, I think, yeah, you're exactly right. North Carolina is the pathway for President Trump to be reelected. It's also the pathway for who determines the majority in the Senate. So those are huge races. As far as North Carolina races are concerned, I'm going to be watching a couple legislative races that are very tight. The races in Guilford County, the races in the Fayetteville area, Cumberland County, some of the races in the northeastern part of the state. To see where those come in. I think some of those down ballot races may very well be bellwether things to watch on election night as things are coming in. And then we've talked about this before, and you know, I think it's worth mentioning again that some of the most important races on the ballot will be the Supreme Court of North Carolina and the Court of Appeals. So that's something else to see how those may be coming in as we're watching the results on election night.
I think the most disturbing thing that we're watching have been these rallies that the President Trump and the Republicans have been having, open-air rallies. I think they have made the decision that it's worth sacrificing some lives and some people's health to have these rallies. I think it's actually working for them. I think it's brought some excitement to their campaign that the Democrats don't have because they're not willing to take that step. And I think Trump has made that decision that he just doesn't care. He's willing to have people put themselves at risk to come cheer for him. But it's working in terms of generating excitement. So I'm sure as far as a narcissist like he is concerned, it's a perfectly acceptable decision. In terms of what I'm going to be watching for, I think it's likely that the Democrats will slightly outperform the Republicans in the overall sort of generic ballot. But because the legislature remains gerrymandered, I think it's going to come down to a seat or two. I saw a very interesting prediction from former lawmaker Charles Jeter. You probably saw that this week, in which he comes up with scenarios where both bodies could literally be tied. So that'll be fascinating to watch. And it'll be fascinating to see what happens with a couple of the Council of State races. A couple of we expect some of the incumbents to win, but it's possible that some challengers could prevail as well. So that'll be fun to watch as well.
Okay, we're going to move quickly through a few topics and races here. Is the future of the Republican Party better off with a Donald Trump defeat on Tuesday night? Yes, is the GOP better off? Becky?
Well, that's an interesting question. There, you know, as I think everyone knows, there are different factions within the Republican Party. There are anti-Trumpers, there are never-Trumpers, there are forever-Trumpers. So I don't know the answer to that. We will see. But I think that's an important factor, and it's important to keep in mind. I don't think that is a factor in the election itself. I think that's one of those that, you know, the Monday morning quarterbacks next Wednesday or Thursday or 2 weeks from then, whenever we get the results, that will be the next step. But that's certainly a valid concern. It's a very valid question.
Do you think the Republican Party is better off for the Do you think the future of the Republican Party is better off with a Donald Trump defeat on Tuesday?
I don't know the answer to that. You know, the Republican Party and the policies that they advocate for, lower taxes, fewer regulation, better investments in infrastructure, the right investments in education, you know, this goes way beyond Donald Trump. So I think it has more to do with the policies and how those are advanced and what we see over the next 4 years. I think that's the greater danger to the Republican Party are the policies that hold that most Republicans hold dear, and the values and the policies are more important than President Trump.
Obviously, I think the Republican Party would be better off if Donald Trump went away. I think the Democratic fantasy, and I think what is entirely possible to happen, is that Biden will win the presidency, and then within a matter of months, as we've heard from former Trump accomplice Steve Bannon, Trump will declare for the 2024 election. He's already predicted that. And that is probably the ultimate nightmare for the Republican Party, to have Trump be the thing that wouldn't leave. And I think that's entirely plausible.
North Carolina has a long history of ticket splitting, Republican presidents, Democratic governors, going back half a century. We saw it most recently 4 years ago. Will we see it again next week? Rob?
It's possible. I think clearly Governor Cooper is going to win handily. So we know we'll have a Democratic governor for the next 4 years. The question is whether Trump can pull it out in the presidential race. I think it's within the margin of error. If I had to bet, I'd bet right now that Democratic enthusiasm will win narrowly. But it's entirely possible.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, this trend may very well continue. I mean, what we're seeing in the polls this week is the Trump-Biden race is really neck and neck, well within the margin of errors. It really could, a lot of people say it's too close to call at this point. Governor Cooper's poll numbers have consistently outranked Dan Forrest. That's tightening as we get closer to Election Day. But the latest I saw was Cooper was up by about 9 points. So if you're looking at those predictors, reading the tea leaves through the polling results that we're seeing, I would say that we could very well be on a track, as we've seen in the past, with a Republican nominee from North Carolina for the president and a Democratic governor. And then the Council of State and other races split kind of evenly. We are clearly a purple state.
We'll see if I can get you to nibble on this next one. You nibbled only so much on that last one. Ticket splitting between a presidential and Senate candidate between different parties has not happened during the last 50 years. Any chance we see that next week, either a Biden-Tillis or a Trump-Cunningham split?
Again, you know, that race, the Tillis-Cunningham race, is just too close to call right now. Cunningham had a lead for quite a while, but with the latest controversy with his affairs with a married woman, and, you know, I mean, we've all been through that, that gap is tightening quite a bit. So I think that's wide open. I think that could go either way.
Yeah, either scenario is possible. I think ultimately what voters are going to come down on is the side of is that they, I mean, Tillis's negatives are actually still much higher than Cunningham. So if I had to predict, again, I would predict a narrow Democratic victory, but they're both within the margin of error. Anything is possible.
I'll say it. I would be stunned if we see a Trump-Cunningham split. It's possible, but history indicates that's not going to happen. But again, I shouldn't be so confident because it is 2020. Power of the legislature is also up in the air. For my money, it's the biggest political prize hanging in the balance. The Democrats need to net 5 seats in the Senate or 4 seats and the lieutenant governorship. In the House, Democrats must net 6. How many chambers will the Democrats take? 0, 1, or 2? Rob?
It's, you know, I think it's entirely possible it might actually be split 50-50. I guess if I had to predict, I'd probably say 1. I think they have probably a slightly better chance actually in the Senate. I think that the lieutenant governor's race is very interesting. The Republican nominee, I think it's a fantasy, frankly, for the Democrats, is that they take over both chambers and that, you know, in their darkest dreams, maybe that this Robinson character wins the lieutenant governorship because he is a deeply troubled soul. And if he's going to be the face of the Republican Party in North Carolina, they got some real trouble.
I think that the Republicans hang on to both bodies of the General Assembly. I think that the margins are smaller. I think we may be looking at, in the Senate of the 50 seats, 27, 28 Republicans. And in the House, it could be some people are saying 65. It could be 60, as low as 63. But I think they hang on, but I think that it is a slimmer gap than what we've seen in the past.
One point that should be mentioned is that they, despite some court rulings, they both remain badly gerrymandered, and the Democrats are likely to win the generic ballot to win more votes. But I think Becky raises a valid point that it's going to be difficult to take over the actual winning a majority of the seats because of the gerrymandering still being in effect.
The next round of redistricting will begin as early as April. Last one, I think. Have you voted, Becky?
Yes, I voted absentee, and I was able to track my ballot, which is very easy to do through the State Board of Elections website. And I have confirmation that my ballot has been received and will be counted when they pull the lever on the absentee ballots.
And I voted at on a lovely day at an early voting site, waited about 30 minutes, and it was a very uplifting experience and positive experience. I hope more people will get out there. It looks like it's going to be a sunny day today and Saturday, so I hope more people will get out there and cast their ballots.
Rob Schofield is director of NC Policy Watch. Becky Gray is senior vice president at the John Locke Foundation. Enjoy your weekends.
Enjoy yours, too.
See ya.
Hang on for next week.
Such a fascinating moment in North Carolina political history and also really American political history. Glad that you have been able to spend part of your time consuming politics and understanding the landscape here with us on the WUNC Politics Podcast. I want to remind you that on Tuesday night, we will be in special coverage. It'll consist of both reports from NPR as well as from us, me, Jeff Tiberi, and one of my colleagues, Will Michaels. We're going to give you updates as we get them on election night. So stop on over to 91.5 FM or join us online, WUNC.org. And just a quick note, another thank you to those of you who are already sustainers or who have pledged in recent days. We didn't exactly know how much of a success. I knew it would be a success. I didn't know how much of a success the pledge drive would be, but it was really a phenomenal outpouring of support. So thank you for chipping in if you happened to do that. Don't forget, you can get caught up on other WUNC podcast offerings, Tested, The State of Things, Embodied, wherever it is that you do that on-demand listening. We'll talk to you again on Tuesday. Until then, for Becky and Rob, I'm Jeff, encouraging you to maybe unplug this weekend. Podcast.
Podcast.
How about Happy Halloween?
No.
No? You say happy, happy.
Happy, happy.
Halloween.
Halloween.
Say happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.